You're listening to Surrounded by History, a podcast of the Blue Earth County Historical Society, produced by Radio Mankato with your host, Historical Society Executive Director Jessica Potter. And now, Surrounded by History.
Hello and welcome to Surrounded by History. I'm your host, Jessica Potter, with the Blue Earth County Historical Society. Joining me today is Radio Mankato's Jeff Lang. Each week, this program explores the history all around us, the history in plain sight. In this segment of Surrounded by History, we will dig into the history, the stories behind one of our prominent historic buildings. Our community celebrates the history of our built environment with many houses and commercial buildings listed on the National Register of Historic Places. In addition, the Mankato Heritage Preservation Commission has designated a series of properties as local landmarks. Today, we will explore the history of a local landmark, the Hunt House, today better known as the Moulin Rouge Bed and Breakfast.
All right, I know where you are.
All right, fantastic. So let's jump in and be surrounded by history. What has been known for over 100 years as the Hunt House is located at 811 South 2nd Street in Mankato. Until recently, the house has been abandoned, vandalized, and was near demolition. Fortunately for local history buffs and old house enthusiasts, Chris Crowell and his wife, Kristen Fisher, purchased the house in 2018 and have worked tirelessly for 3 years to restore the home into a historic house, bed and breakfast, which opened in June of 2021. The 1880s house is listed on the National Register of Historic Places as a contributing property to the listing for the Lincoln Park neighborhood. Is something we talked about in a previous podcast.
So many houses in that area.
Exactly. This house is an ornate, unusual example of the Queen Anne style built by brick. Some of the most picturesque features are the two-story tower, the stained glass window, curved leaded glass, and a sweeping side porch perfect for sitting a spell. If these walls could talk, 811 South 2nd Street, Mankato. In 1886, a little house at 811 South 2nd Street was purchased by Lewis and Lizbeth Hunt. The Hunts quickly more than doubled the size of the house by adding a full second story, a turret or a tower, with a spiral staircase, a front entry, a parlor with a bow window, dining room, and side porch. This is a beautiful, stately house. But who were the Hunts? Lewis P. Hunt was born in St. Louis County, New York, on September 22, 1854. In 1863, his parents moved to Independence, Iowa. In 1867, at the age of 13, he began learning the printer's trade. 2 years later, he took the foremanship of a small county office at Earlville, Iowa.
Such an Iowa town name.
Exactly. Until 1880, at the age of 26, when he entered into business for himself at Lanesboro, Minnesota. So basically, at the age of 15, he was running a small county newspaper.
Crazy.
So in 26, he started running the business in Lanesboro, and he had a mechanical charge of several offices in Iowa and Illinois.
Wow.
At this very young age, which is vast experience.
What's that mean by mechanical charge?
Meaning he would have been the one running all of the printing.
Okay, he was taking care of all the printing.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. With his vast experience in business, in 1881, Lewis purchased part interest in the Free Press in Mankato, and a year later became the sole owner. In 1887, he organized the Free Press Printing Company and turned the weekly Free Press newspaper into a daily, with himself being the editor and general manager.
Good to own the company.
Exactly. So at this time, there was actually three companies. There was the printing company, so they'd be printing like letterhead and books and things like that. They also had the weekly newspaper, and then they had the daily newspaper.
Oh, wow. That's, he owned all those then.
He owned all of them and ran all of them.
Okay.
In addition to running the local newspaper and printing company, if that wasn't enough, he was also commissioned postmaster of Mankato from 1883 to 1885 and again from 1897 to 1902. And in 1990, he was appointed a national committeeman from Minnesota to the World's Columbian Exhibition at Chicago.
The World's Fair.
Yeah, exactly, the Chicago World's Fair. He undertook the Herculean task of raising $100,000 from Minnesota citizens to supplement the $50,000 appropriated by the legislature for the purpose of making an exhibit that would be in keeping with the great and varied interests of Minnesota. And later, the legislature appropriated an equal sum to reimburse those patriotic citizens who so generously pledged the amount for the credit of their state in the greatest exposition ever held. He represented Minnesota at the 1893 World's Fair from 1890 until the close of the affair, or the fair and the affairs of the commission, all wound up in 1894.
The fair goes for that many years?
So the fair, the planning of the fair starts in 1890.
Oh, okay.
The commission really kicks off in 1891. The fair itself ran, it opened in May of 1893, and it ran until October of 1893. It was 6 months long.
Wow. I mean, it brought people in from around the world and around the country.
Exactly.
I get
exactly.
That being a long one, but that's still a really long fair.
It was. It took basically 2 years to build it.
I believe that.
Which is a long time, but not a very long time. So we could talk about this all day. So I'll go back to Lewis. Lewis was also a delegate at large to the Republican National Convention at St. Louis in 1896. That was where they nominated William McKinley as the Republican candidate for the President of the United States. He also served as the president of the Minnesota State Editorial Association in 1899. So Lewis, as you can see, was quite a figure in Mankato and Minnesota, serving in Chicago for the World's Fair. But I cannot wait to tell you about his wife, Liz.
Oh, boy. Lewis is already, like, crazy busy. Like, he's got so many things. I can understand how they can afford a house. Now you're excited to tell me about Lizzie. So.
Oh, Lizzie. She's one of my new favorite ladies in history.
Okay.
So Lewis married Lizbeth, she went by Lizzie Putnam, in September of 1874. While Lewis was making a name for himself, Lizzie was his support. According to a 1946 Mankato Free Press article by Lucy Pope Taylor, this was a woman who grew up across the street from the Hunts, and she wrote in this article all kinds of different things in memory of who Lizzie and Lewis were. And she made note that Lizzie was a most devoted wife, quote, devoted to the nth degree to a husband of great personal charm, she waited on him hand and foot. She went with him everywhere and could go to Europe on 5 minutes' notice. She not only laid out his clothes, laundered his shirts just as he wanted them, but she put the studs and collar buttons in and tied his ties, even helped him in the bath, end quote. Lizzie once said that, quote, why, sure, if I didn't wash his back, it wouldn't be done until the undertaker did it, end quote. Isn't that awesome?
Yeah.
Okay, so she sounds like a very typical, what you read about.
A housewife at this time frame.
Yeah, 1880s, 1870s, yeah. 80s, 90s housewife. Okay? All right. Lewis was lucky to have such a woman by his side, but Lizzie wasn't content to sit in the shadows. She proved to be an intellectual dynamo and a fine business person in her own right. Lizzie was the general contractor for the construction of 4 houses in Lincoln Park neighborhood through the years, including her own. In fact, when the Hunts purchased their home in 1896, Lizzie's name is the only one listed on the title.
Wow.
Lewis might have supplied the cash for the construction project, but Lizzie was the ramrod for getting the houses built or the construction done. Lizzie worked from 7 a.m. till 6 p.m. overseeing the workers. No one dared put anything over on her. According to Taylor, that article back in the 40s, people were afraid of Lizzie, and she enjoyed it. wearing an old felt hat of her husband's and her hands crammed into the pockets of one of his discarded overcoats, she would stride up the alley and around the corner with an air of authority. But on the other hand, Taylor wrote, in quotes, in evening dress of black lace or velvet, diamond earrings, thick natural waves of whitening hair and dark eyes, Lizzie was beautiful, end quote. So remember I mentioned that Lewis had a significant involvement in the 1893 Chicago's World Fair?
Yep.
He was part of the Minnesota delegation. Well, you guessed it. Lizzie was also part of that delegation. While Lewis served as the superintendent of the state exhibit on the Board of Commissioners, Lizzie served as the secretary to start and then became the president of the Women's Auxiliary Board.
Wow.
Lizzie, in that role, she also served as the state chairman of flora and collected an exhibit of pressed flora flowers and oil paintings of flowers. She collected more than 800 varieties of wildflowers and 125 grasses from around the state for a World's Fair exhibit. And by the way, she won an award for that as well.
Amazing.
Lizzie helped to arrange an exhibit of Bohemian lace from Brown County, and she was involved in decorating of the reception rooms in the Minnesota building. She spent much of the fair in the Minnesota building, where she acted as hostess in the boardroom. Lizzie was also part of a group of ladies credited with the creation of Minnesota's state flag, which was first unfurled at the fair.
We didn't have a flag until then?
Right. Yeah.
Because we were, what year? 1893. And what year are we coming to state again?
1858. But the whole point of having a flag was so that you could fly it at your building at the World's Fair.
Oh, you wouldn't need one until then, necessarily.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
I know.
Okay.
There's lots of little rabbit holes here. Prepare yourself.
Okay.
Lizzie was also the driving force behind the creation of a statue called Hiawatha in Minnehaha by Minnesota artist Jacob Fielda. It was commissioned for the 1893 World's Fair, and Lizzie helped to raise funds by asking Minnesota school children to contribute their pennies. The plaster statue greeted visitors to the Minnesota building at the World's Fair in Chicago. After the fair, Lizzie again asked the school children to raise money for the statue, this time for a bronze version. She started raising money in 1902. The statue was accepted by the Minneapolis Park Board in 1911. But sadly, it wasn't installed near Minnehaha Falls until after her death in 1912. There was some disagreement over the statue among some of the powers that be on the Minneapolis Park Board.
Saying Minneapolis, big city people?
Yeah, but this is awesome. Shortly after her death, I mean like within a month of her death, a member of the Park Board told Minneapolis if they didn't install the statue, it would be put in St. Paul instead.
Of course. In that case, we can't have that happen.
Exactly. The bronze statue was quickly installed and still stands today near Minnehaha Creek, just upstream from Minnehaha Falls. There is a bronze plaque at the base of the statue that reads, hold on to your horses here.
Okay.
Quote, Hiawatha and Minnehaha by Jacob Fielda, erected in 1911 by means of funds raised through the efforts of Mrs. L.P. Hunt of Mankato and contributed principally by the school children of Minnesota.
Oh, that's cool.
So, in 1896, Lizzie turned her attentions, this is after the World's Fair, she turned her attentions locally and was instrumental in forming the Mankato Art History Club. Besides meeting regularly to discuss art history, the group was civic-minded, arranging English language night classes for Syrians that lived in Tinkhamville, that's James Avenue area. We talked about that in the previous podcast.
Yes, we did.
The group also encouraged an interest in art in the public schools and advocated for public schools to practice fire drills. Lizzie was also a member of the Minnesota State Horticultural Society and was a strong proponent for making the showy lady's slipper orchid the state flower of Minnesota.
Wow.
I know. Incredible woman.
Wait, she made it so the lady slipper is our state flower?
She was one of the proponents of it, yes.
Wow.
I know.
Okay.
And the lady slipper shows up on the state flag. in 1883.
That's right. It is on the state flag.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know if she, I haven't done the research to know which came first, but she definitely made sure that was on the state flag. So that is also
incredible.
Our state flower.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
She's an incredible woman in a time where many women were unable to leave their mark on history. And this woman has
just kept doing it.
And literally her name is in bronze.
Powerhouse couple.
It's awesome. Wait. One more thing.
Okay.
About the house the Hunts lived in for over 20 years, the one here in Mankato.
Yeah.
So, remember, they both attended the World's Fair.
Yep.
They served on the board. They attended it. Well, they brought back a souvenir. There is a curved, beveled glass window in the bow window at the front of the house. That curved, beveled glass window was from the French Pavilion at the World's Fair.
Wow.
So, as you can probably imagine with all of these little rabbit holes about the Chicago World's Fair, I would anticipate there might be a podcast coming soon on that.
Just that alone?
Just that alone. So I think this might be a good spot for us to take a little break, catch our breaths, and we'll come back and learn more about the Hunt House.
Hey, we're back talking about the Hunt House on Surrounded by History. Jessica, just keep on going. This has been a lot of fun to learn about. It's a powerhouse couple.
A powerhouse couple in the 1890s.
There's so many things about this house I want to go see now.
I know. And please take the opportunity. It is an awesome bed and breakfast. So the 1900 Mankato City Directory stated that Lewis Hunt was the owner of the Free Press Publishing Company and editor of its daily newspaper, as well as postmaster at the Mankato Post Office. At the age of 46, in the prime of his life, Lewis had two prestigious jobs, lived in one of the nicest homes in Mankato, and was married to the beautiful and talented Lizzie. Then in 1902, he sold his interest in the Free Press to his brother Frank Hunt and resigned from being postmaster. He continued to live at his house and wrote occasional articles for the newspaper. In 1908, the Hunts moved to Alaska to run a salmon canning factory with several other people from Mankato. This raised a few questions and a few eyebrows. Your eyebrows went up.
I have questions.
Me too. Perhaps Lewis was just financially secure and ready to try something new after 30-plus years in the publishing industry. Lewis became the general manager of this new company, and Lizzie, by his side, stayed active in the company, counting money, supervising the workers, and caring for them when they were ill or injured. The couple moved to Seattle, Washington, and still spent their summers up in Alaska with the salmon canning factory. On August 31st, 1912, while in Alaska, Lizzie died of a bacteria infection at 54 years of age.
Right.
In 1946, that same Mankato Free Press article written by a woman that grew up across the street said that Lewis was heartbroken, utterly lost and desolate. He had never done anything without Lizzie. He simply didn't know how. When he came back to Mankato for a visit after his death, he looked at this woman with tears in his eyes and said, quote, you know how much Lizzie meant to me, end quote. Lewis died in Seattle 10 years later in 1922 at the age of 67. That's not the end of the Hunt House, of course.
Of course, but I have some questions.
I know. It's fantastic, isn't it?
Yeah.
So the next chapter for the house. In 1911, remember the Hunts sell the house in 1908.
Yep.
1911 has the next family to move in, George and Agnes Atkinson, bought the house. And George, he was a man of his own right. He dealt in real estate, doing extensive business in southern Minnesota. His obituary describes him as being a veteran in civic circles. He was a trustee of the First Presbyterian Church, on the city council, a director and active member of the commercial club, and served several terms as the director of the Chamber of Commerce.
Wow.
George was also responsible for the founding of the Mankato Fair Association and later was a member of the State Fair Board. When horse racing was popular in Mankato, he was listed among several people who owned racehorses. George and his wife Agnes were both born in Ireland. They lived in Mankato for 38 years until George's death in 1934. He and Agnes were wealthy enough to be able to have a live-in maid, according to the 1920 census.
Hmm.
After George's death, Agnes moved to Des Moines, Iowa to live with their daughter and two grandchildren. The Hunt House at this point entered a six-year period during which it was foreclosed on and was either vacant or had sporadic occupants. Finally, in 1940, Henry and Betty Webb rented the house and a year later purchased it. For the next 75 years, the house stayed in this family.
Oh, wow.
Betty was a hairstylist and had her beauty parlor on the main floor of the house. The beauty parlor's name, what do you think it was called?
Hunt House? I have no clue.
Moulin Rouge Beauty Shop.
And there it is.
Uh-huh. The business and house were passed down to their daughter, and the Moulin Rouge Beauty Shop continued until 2010. In 2015, the home was purchased by Mankato developers who wanted to tear down the home to build an apartment building. City of Mankato denied this request due to the home's historical significance in the community, and the home sat empty until 2018, when Chris and Kristen purchased it with the intention to restore it to its original beauty. Their dream was to open a bed and breakfast with three guest rooms, call it the Moulin Rouge House Bed and Breakfast, named after the beauty shop. Despite ornate fireplace mantles previously having been ripped from the walls, some stamped metal ceiling tiles stolen, and decades of deferred maintenance, they embraced the historic restoration process with many local, talented, and dedicated craftsmen, including themselves, to perform the work. Today, the home features many original historical elements, including they've uncovered the original wood floors, beautified the stamped metal ceiling, and that famous curved leaded glass window has been re-leaded.
Cool. But that's still there.
It's still there.
Like after, I mean, people are stealing stuff and they left that alone. Probably too big, but
it's
still.
Still there. The Moulin Rouge Bed and Breakfast officially opened to its first guests in June of 2021. This is a place that I know Chris and Kristen are always happy to have visitors come and learn more about the hunts and learn more about the Moulin Rouge Bed and Breakfast. We hope you enjoyed today's program as we explore the history of a local landmark, the Hunt House, also known today as the Moulin Rouge Bed and Breakfast. All of the information we share today comes from the archives of the Blue Earth County Historical Society. Thank you for joining us today. Until next time, we hope you see the history that surrounds you.
You've been listening to Surrounded by History, a podcast from the Blue Earth County Historical Society, produced by Radio Mankato. For more information on this and other topics, visit BlueEarthCountyHistory.com or stop by the Blue Earth County History Center at 424 Warren Street in Mankato. Thanks for listening to Surrounded by History.